This weekend starts right after this.
Managing your 401k is hard. Bloom isn't. See what you could be doing to make your 401k better by getting a free analysis at bloom401k.com/deal. That's Bloom with three O's, 401k.com/deal.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Becoming a better saver. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Americans are notorious for failing to put away enough money for things like emergencies and retirement. A personal finance expert has solutions.
The latest true story resurrected on cable TV, Waco, being featured in a series on the Paramount Network. We'll have a preview.
Minnesota wants to break away from the shadow of the Midwest by rebranding itself. Hear the campaign of embracing the cold.
And the new trend in baby accessories, makes and models designed by dads.
Most of these dads say that the diaper bags they saw in stores were too flowery, frilly, they had ruffles, they just looked a little girly, and these dads were not particularly girly people.
Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey on things like camouflage diaper bags. She's here later in the hour. If you ever heard a speech by Vice President Mike Pence, it wouldn't be surprising if you also heard a biblical reference. For example, confirming the administration's commitment to Central America back in June, Mr. Pence called it a new era. He said, quote, "The old book tells us that we should encourage one another and build each other up, just as, in fact, we are doing." More on the importance of the Bible to the Vice President from Maureen Groppi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Maureen, what have you put together?
Well, faith, of course, is very central to who Mike Pence is. He was raised Catholic. He became an evangelical Christian, and he describes himself as a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order. And faith, not only is it central to him, but it's something that's very interesting about him because he's the ultimate example of this unusual partnership that Christian conservatives have with Trump. So I wanted to take a look at how that's working for him and sort of what both are getting out of it and how the Bible is in his faith is informing his approach to his public life.
What do Christian conservatives point to here when it comes to Vice President Pence?
Well, he was a reason that many of them were willing to support the ticket. You know, they had questions about Trump, both his character as well as his positions. He had gone back and forth on what he said on abortion, for example. But Pence is one of them. He speaks their language. He's got strong support in that community. So he was a sign that that the administration might have the kind of policies that they were hoping for. And in fact, when I talked with leaders from the religious right for a related story on this, they were all very pleased with the first year of the Trump administration, and some of them said that they had more progress on issues that they care about, such as abortion, than they've had under even some other Republican presidents.
Mm. You point out, too, he makes references to the Bible in a lot of his speeches, right? How often or how frequently do those, say, passages appear in his speeches?
It's pretty often, but it's not usually central to the speech. It's not what the speech is built around. But so it's interesting that he still wants to reflect, have a little bit in there of who he is. And so there's often a reference to a passage in the Bible, even if it's not, even if the topic is not something that would naturally lend itself to that. For example, when he's speaking to mourners after a mass shooting, of course, he would. It would be natural to turn to his faith, but even when he was giving speeches about the importance of the tax package or talking about the administration's plan to send astronauts back to the moon, he slips in a reference to the Bible that he thinks is relevant. And he studies his Bible regularly, and there's some passages that he goes back to a lot, and one in particular that he references and that he also has hanging in his home is particularly instructive. It's a passage about God. It's from Jeremiah, and it's, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope in the future." Mm. And it's telling him that there's a purpose, that God has a purpose for him, and you have to figure out what it is, and you have to to try to maximize the talents that God has given you in order to fulfill that purpose. So some of the people who know him see that as a reason why he was willing to be partners with Trump, because he sees himself as he's there for a reason. He had this, has this opportunity for a reason, and he's going to try to make the most of it and both serve the party, but as I said, he considers himself a Christian first, so he's going to also try to see what he can do through his faith to pursue the issues that he most cares about.
You mentioned the partnership with Mr. Trump, but that doesn't mean he hasn't distanced himself from Mr. Trump on occasion, right?
He has, but rarely. Usually what he's most known for is his very effusive praise of the president, and sometimes that's been mocked because he sometimes seems to go over the top a little bit. And, of course, this is a president who likes being praised and doesn't like being overshadowed, so that would be a smart tactic for anyone who's his number two. But Pence also has an approach that he's long followed called servant leadership, which is about, if you want, putting being deferential to authority, putting others ahead of you. And so people who know him say that's something he would be doing anyway, that sort of deference, extreme deference to the president.
How much is Mr. Pence helped by the fact that he does not seek the spotlight?
Well, I think that's a smart tactic in this administration. And, of course, the folks he has strong ties to, people on leaders of the religious right, and also fiscal conservatives and other folks that have been influential in Republican politics, they know they have they have links to him, and they can reach out to him. But he doesn't tout those. He doesn't say he's the reason that any of them are getting policies that they're hoping for.
Yeah.
He still gives all the credit to Trump and says anything he's doing is just helping Trump do what he would be doing anyway.
Thanks, Maureen. Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 13 minutes now after the hour. On This Weekend, do you have a 401k? Remember how frustrating it was deciding what to invest in without professional help? Now there's a better way to grow your 401k. Bloom, with three O's, is a simple, smart, and affordable way to grow your 401k. Go online to bloom401k.com/deal and simply connect your existing 401k in a few easy steps. Then sit back and relax while Bloom performs an unbiased analysis of the funds in your account and chooses the best mix to meet your goals while minimizing hidden investment fees. Bloom researches, invests, manages, monitors, and grows your 401k while you relax. With Bloom's free analysis, you can see the impact they can make on your 401k before you even pay. Bloom is one of the fastest-growing robo-advisors. Bloom is so simple. In fact, the hardest part about this is remembering there are three O's in Bloom. Go to bloom401k.com/deal and enter the promo code Gordon for your first month free and see the difference Bloom can make in your retirement. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. You've heard these shocking numbers. 33,000 lives were lost to opioid overdose back in 2015. That's 91 people dying each day, and the numbers have only worsened. How does someone, by the way, with no drug abuse history, actually become an addict? We're joined now by addiction specialist Dr. Isaac Alexis, medical director of the Lifeline Addiction Center in Southern West Virginia, also author of Life and Death Behind the Brick and Razor. Doctor, what kind of folks do you see?
Lots of times patients come to our center after they suffered a major car accident, wreck. They might have been working on scaffolding. They fall 30 feet. They fracture the majority of their spine. They're in excruciating pain. They initially go to their regular primary care physician. They get a two-week supply of a strong opioid. And however, after 2 weeks, they still find themselves in a lot of pain. And then that 1 week extra of narcotic they request becomes 2 months and 3 months. And then next thing you know, they are addicted to it. Other people I find addicted to opioids, they are unemployed, there's low socioeconomic status. Many of them tell me that they were just bored and was hanging out with the wrong crowd.
Wow.
And I see that also as the gateway to the opioid crisis as well.
How quickly can someone get addicted?
It can take as short as 14 to 21 days.
And the widespread problem here of obviously of addiction and death, that who shares the blame? Is it doctors prescribing too much? People too eager to try pain medication? What's happening here?
Lots of times, part of the cause of it is some of the doctors' overzealous prescriptions of opioids. You had about 76 million prescriptions written in 1991. That skyrocketed to 220 million by 2013. And lots of times it was for just chronic muscle spasms and not for cancer pain or acute kidney stone pain, which is excruciatingly painful, similar to cancer. But a lot of times, a lot of the deaths came from the addicts taking heroin that was laced and tainted with an elephant tranquilizer called carfentanil. It only takes a few grains of salt, table salt amount of this carfentanil to kill you.
Wow. What were those numbers again from, say, 1990?
76 million prescriptions in 1991 and skyrocketed to 210 million in 2013.
Holy cow. Wow.
Yep.
Mm. The problem is getting worse right now, or because of awareness, have we started to manage it? How would you characterize it?
I'd say that the fact that it's affecting all socioeconomic stratas, whether it's the young college student, whether it's the homeless person, whether it's even the physician, it's so widespread because now it's being recognized that it's everybody's issue and problem.
Do you sense that doctors are starting to approach this differently now in terms of when or how much or how frequently they prescribe this?
I say that doctors now are treading the area more judiciously, and they are trying to, you know, rein in the, you know, overzealous prescribing of various opioids, but still remains a major problem in, you know, young people that may be subject to peer pressure. And it only takes sometimes just one use of the heroin, depending on what the local drug dealer mixes with it. It can make it so addictive that it takes just one try for them to become hooked.
Man, we're speaking with Dr. Isaac Alexis, medical director of the Lifeline Addiction Center. He's in the Beckley region of West Virginia. Also author of a book called Life and Death Behind the Brick and Razor. We're talking about how the average person becomes a drug addict. Can anybody get addicted, by the way? Or do some people have, I don't know, a gene or something where they don't get addicted?
Great question. There have been studies that have shown that patients that have been alcoholics have had various genetic modifications that make them more susceptible to cocaine use and other drugs of abuse at the molecular genetic genomic level.
Wow, yeah.
So there is some risk with, you know, looking at the DNA, yes.
That is Dr. Isaac Alexis, medical director of the Lifeline Addiction Center in West Virginia. 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. 25 years after a shootout and FBI raid in Waco, Texas, left 82 members of the Branch Davidian religious sect and four federal agents dead, a six-part cable series re-examines the siege.
This is my family. May not be like your family, but you come pointing guns in the direction of my wives and my kids, I will meet you at the door any time.
More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
In the world of entertainment, we're going backwards. TV series, books, and podcasts are all resurrecting true stories, the latest being a new cable series about Waco. John Jurgensen of The Wall Street Journal is here with more on this torn from the headline streak and has more. John, what's with this Waco series? How did this all come about?
I think it's one of those ones where it could have been an anniversary that kicked it off, but actually it was a bit of an accident, I think, on the part of the filmmakers who stumbled on the Waco story maybe about 5 years ago. Of course, they remembered it, but they were looking for a backstory to give one of their fictional characters in a feature film and thought maybe he could be an ex-cult member. And as they did research on Waco and what happened there, they realized that that story was a lot more interesting than the one they were working on, and also saw an opening because no one had really retold that story since it happened in the 90s.
So what are they hoping to get out of this?
I mean, I think there's a couple things there. I mean, on one hand, they really like the idea, I mean, from a storytelling point of view, of retelling a story that seems familiar, I mean, at least for those of us who remember the headlines. But actually, I think if you'll sort of give a lot of regular people the history test, we'd probably fail it because, you know, we seem to remember the headlines, but not much more details than that. So they were eager to kind of go back into the story and tell it from a different point of view, because that was one of the kind of meta stories about Waco, was that it was like, you know, it was a media spectacle, and you know, we were only getting information that the federal authorities were giving us. And so a lot of us, once the tragedy happened there, didn't really, you know, stick around to find out what actually happened inside. So that was their whole goal, to tell it from both sides, inside the ranch and outside too.
We're speaking with John Jurgensen of the Wall Street Journal. John, why are these TV series resonating with audiences?
I don't know if they all do. I think that they are sort of fertile territory for producers and filmmakers and networks because, like I said, they are familiar stories, so that's marketing, right? I mean, it's just like the reason people make sequels to big movies and they, you know, make films based on comic book stories that we're all familiar with. They, you know, they want to have a starting point that is familiar to begin with, and these big sort of American stories, and often tabloid stories, fit the bill for that, too. But I think also they do draw in some Hollywood talent. Taylor Kitsch, who plays David Koresh, Michael Shannon plays one of the FBI negotiators. I mean, these are kind of like prestige products, right? Because they can do it in six episodes. It's an easy in and easy out. Well, not easy maybe, but it's a quick in and quick out. It might get some awards buzz, and they certainly get critical attention too. So, you know, they tick off a few boxes that make them attractive for networks and producers.
What has the impact of People versus O.J. Simpson had on producers of similar stories?
I think that one was huge, in terms of getting other stories like this off the ground. I mean, the producers of Waco found out, well, they were pitching their project, Waco, right after the People versus O.J. came out. So they credited that as being a huge help because suddenly, you know, every network wanted to do their version of that story. Because I think before the People versus O.J. came out, it just seemed like a crazy thing to do. Like, how is this tabloidy story starring on this random assortment of celebrities going to be successful or even serious? And it turned out to be both. So it really showed that you can take stories that seemed like, you know, relics of the past and make them relevant again.
And they could have taken facts that we didn't know about before and weave them in. And that's what's so interesting about it, right?
Yeah, really. And I mean, I think where you kind of get into sometimes overreaching is when you're starting to make it seem like, all right, you know, OJ is telling us a story about what's happening today, or Waco is relevant because of what's happening, the, you know, scrutiny of the FBI now. I mean, I think that's definitely a big leap, and a lot of viewers maybe might make those connections.
Wall Street Journal reporter John Jurgensen with This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka, 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Glad you could spend some time with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. Solutions for Americans who still struggle to save money. Also, worried about diaper bag emasculation? Good story from the Wall Street Journal about ones in camouflage. And the Super Bowl berth that was the team endeavor for a couple of professional athletes in different sports. That story in about 20 minutes. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at MichiganBusiness.org. Contact them today. A growing movement in Minnesota aims to break free of its Midwest roots and embrace its bone-chilling winters with a new identity, the North. Seeking to conjure up images of competitive winter sports, icy lakes, and snuggling in front of a toasty fire, These northern evangelists are ready for their moment in the sun when Super Bowl 52 comes to Minneapolis next Sunday. Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race paid a visit. Shandy, what'd you find?
Well, there's a growing movement in Minnesota to recast its image as the northern United States, sort of akin to the Scandinavian countries in northern Europe. And, you know, they want to make it a cool place and sort of distinct from the west of the Midwest. And, you know, it's not just flyover country, but there's sort of this great winter culture there. And they really are trying to sort of highlight that and make the state really cool and attractive. And, you know, now with the Super Bowl coming up, this is sort of their opportunity to sort of show this new image to the rest of the country.
Now, I thought it was interesting. You quoted the former mayor of Minneapolis as saying, "We're sick of being this afterthought in this afterthought called the Midwest." Where did that come from? I never saw the Midwest as that.
Yeah, I think they feel that way. You know, it was interesting speaking to a lot of Minnesotans who grew up in different parts of the state and sort of seeing how they were depicted in popular culture, especially like Fargo or I don't know if you remember, there was a New York Times article that, you know, said that Minnesota's like the food of the state was grape salad, and the state just felt like they'd been completely misunderstood. Like Okay. Nobody eats grape salad, and they don't know where that came from. And so they have this feeling that they were sort of just like one of these flyover states that people don't really know too much about, except maybe that it's really cold and people speak funny.
Oh.
And so they really want to change that image and kind of, you know, have this sort of like cool, adventurous, you know, you don't think of Norway or Sweden as sort of, you know, these kind of like lame, weird places.
Okay.
You think of them as really cool, and they want to sort of, you know, take a line from that.
So what are they doing about this image they're trying to project now?
So it really started very interestingly from one guy. His name's Eric Dayton, and he's actually the son of the current governor, Mark Dayton, and he started a clothing company called Askov Finlayson, and they started by creating these hats that said the word North on them, and they sold a few of them, and it just took off, and he's really been the champion. He gave his TED Talk in 2015, and people in the state have listened to it, and just totally resonated, and now you sort of see this whole idea of the North popping up all over the place. You've got this Great Northern Festival in the wintertime. You've got a summer festival, Northern Spark, and it's just sort of, and now, I mean, the really big event is the Super Bowl. Their slogan is the Bold North. And everything that they're showcasing is sort of around cold winter sports and just how Minnesota's bold and it's cold, but they embrace the cold and the people are hardy and, you know, fearless. And so you've got a lot of really cool stuff that the Super Bowl's doing. One of them, which I was offered to do but didn't take them up on, sadly, was to go on a zip line 100 feet in the air over the Mississippi River. So, yeah, they've got a lot of fun stuff going on.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race. She's written a piece entitled "Minnesota Embraces Its Terrible Weather. Won't You Too?" Trying to project a new image, maybe tied here to the Super Bowl. You point out, too, like the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, right? I mean, low unemployment, well below the national average. Like, what's not to like, I guess?
Yeah, and I think what's key about some of the economic angle here is that it's not just like, oh, we feel bad that people don't like us or don't really know us. It's more like we have a really low unemployment rate. We need workers. Our population is growing very slowly, and unless people start moving to Minnesota, either immigrants or people from the U.S. moving from other states, they're going to have a real problem because they can't fill jobs. And so this has really taken on a sort of economic necessity. And so it's not just like a cool thing that some like chefs and, you know, shop owners are doing. It's something that the economic development groups have really latched onto, and tourism groups have really latched onto. And this is sort of viewed as essential for their economy. They've got to figure out a way to convince millennials to move to the state.
Wow. That seems like a project in and of itself.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, a lot of what I've been writing about lately has been how different states and different cities are trying to tackle this problem,
yes,
which is the Midwest has really weak population growth. The Western United States, the South, they're growing decently, but the Northeast and the Midwest are really struggling on that front. And so everybody's trying to think up creative ways to get at this. Like, how do we get people to come here? And this is one way that Minnesota's doing it, and I just thought it was sort of a really creative and unique approach.
Good story. Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. on This Weekend. Are you looking to hit your fitness goals? Well, let Beachbody On Demand help you get there. No need to go to a gym or schedule a class. Everything is right there on your personal device. Beachbody On Demand has programs for any fitness level, and the workouts range from cardio and weight training to yoga, low impact, and even dance. There are over 600 different workouts. Beachbody On Demand even provides comprehensive nutrition plans because working out is just part of the equation. There's access to information on meal prep, variety of recipes, and simple but proven eating plans. Give it a try. Right now, our listeners can get a free trial membership when you text the word Gordon to 303030. You get full access to this entire platform for free. All the workouts and nutrition information free. Just text the word Gordon to 303030. Again, free trial for Beachbody On Demand. Text Gordon to 303030. Welcome aboard. Americans still struggle to save money and have been fighting this battle for years. Such difficulties were understandable when the economy was in recession, right? And job losses were mounting. But now hiring is brisk and wages are starting to climb a bit. Even the new tax reform legislation could make dollars more available. Yet Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, says it doesn't seem to be getting much better. So how can we do more? Russ, why does this persist, first off?
You know, the economy is doing well. People are going back to work, a lot of job income rising a little bit. Yet people are still struggling with this basic concept.
You know, you use the F word, and I think it's key here, frustration. Because I think sometimes people hear a number like, you need to be saving 10 to 15% of your salary, or you're going to need at least $1 million to retire. And it just sounds so overwhelming that there's inertia, right? They don't do anything.
I agree. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, I think it's better to start slowly and achieve some, make some progress, achieve some goals. I mean, I think your first goal, I mean, before even worrying about saving 15% or 10% of your salary for the year, is just building up an emergency fund. I mean, there was just even after I wrote this column a week or so ago, there was just a new survey out this week by Bankrate.com indicating about 40% of Americans would have trouble come up or lack $1,000. You know, and that doesn't go very far if you have an emergency car repair or something. So I think that's what gets a lot of people in trouble. They simply don't have any rainy day funds or emergency funds in case something comes up.
How important, by the way, in all this is the automatic saving?
Well, I think that's really critical. I've spent a lot of time looking at 401k style retirement plans at work, and you can argue that they have a lot of nice features, including tax deferral. Usually, you can put your money in pre-tax. Many employers will offer matching funds. They often, depending on the program and you're in, you often get a good selection of mutual funds or other options, investment options. But I think one of the key factors is just this ability to put aside money each from each paycheck, and after a couple pay periods, you stop thinking about it. So this money is being taken out of your pay automatically, and it's going into a fund of your choice or funds of your choice. And after a little while, you adjust.
Yeah.
You adjust to the lower take-home pay, and you don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is really important. You don't have to do, an automatic saving plan through a 401k. You can set them up through other, mutual funds or other options. But the key is, I think, just to take away or to get out of the decision of making or the danger of having to make a decision every paycheck
right.
In terms of saving it. To put it away, to have it put away automatically.
Thanks, Russ. Russ Wiles, personal finance writer at the Arizona Republic. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. If you want the absolute best shirts around, you have to go to CT Shirts. I want you to try them because once you do, you'll never go back to some random shirt off the shelf of a department store. And CT Shirts come in custom sizes, so you're not messing with ill-fitted sleeve lengths or neck sizes. It's time to step up your game and look your best, so I got you a special CT Shirts deal. Three CT Shirts for $99. CT Shirts use the softest, most exquisite fabrics ever. Work or casual, tie or no tie, tuck or untucked, when you're wearing a CT Shirt, you'll look your best. Here's the deal. One CT Shirt normally costs $100, but right now, you get three shirts for just $99. That's 60% off. Go to ctshirts.com/deal. And CT Shirts come with free delivery, a 6-month quality guarantee, and free returns. If you hurry, $99 gets you three amazing CT Shirts. ctshirts.com/deal. That's ctshirts.com/deal. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. Baby products are a booming business, estimated this year to produce more than $11 billion in revenue worldwide. Products have historically been made to appeal to women who drive these purchasing decisions, but things are changing. A few years ago, mainstream companies saw an untapped market, men. Men who definitely don't want floral prints. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey. Corinne, where'd this come from?
It started a couple years ago, and in the past few years, they seem to be multiplying.
This is for the dads not so comfortable carrying around ones covered in, say, flowers and things like that.
Yeah, most of these dads say that the diaper bags they saw in stores were too flowery, frilly, they had ruffles, they just looked a little girly, and these dads were not particularly girly people.
All right, so some of these ideas have come from who?
They have come from the dads who buy them and from the people who make this gear, some of which have, or some of whom have military backgrounds. And so the details are sort of almost identical to that in military gear, the particular type of webbing, the kind of construction of the bags and carriers.
Wow. All right, so give a for example.
So, for example, there is a, so you know a baby carrier, like you kind of strap a baby in and hold the baby against your chest. There's baby carriers that look like the kind of vests that law enforcement wear. So they look kind of like SWAT vests, or people call them tactical vests, except they have a baby in them.
That's funny. You said in the story, too, that baby products are a booming business. How come? We're not necessarily having more now than we have in the past, or are we?
Well, that's a good question. Part of that is when people have babies later, they have more disposable income, they spend more on baby products. And, you know, people want to spend money on their babies. They want to make sure that their babies have everything that they could possibly need. And for some men, that includes military-style gear.
Does that mean possibly, too, that men are taking on more of the responsibilities for caring for a baby?
For sure, yeah, that is absolutely true. And the mainstream companies have seen this in the past few years, and they've done various things to cater to men. They've, like you see more diaper bags that are sort of more sleek looking, neutral colors. They look a little bit more like a messenger bag or a briefcase. There's baby or carriers made by a prominent brand that are sort of, they're black and they're just much more gender-neutral styles.
Thanks, Corinne. Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, thanks for being with us. The minute the final whistle blew on the U.S. Women's Friendly with Denmark last weekend in San Diego, an easy victory, midfielder Julie Ertz turned her focus to the NFL, specifically the NFC Championship game in Philadelphia, where her husband, Zach Ertz, was trying to help the Eagles get to the Super Bowl. Good recap from the LA Times. It says when a team official finally convinced her that the Eagles had beaten the Vikings, she collapsed into a teammate's arms in tears.
Yes!
The scene lit up social media, and a short time later, Zach, who led the NFC tight ends in receptions and receiving yardage during the regular season, teared up in the Eagles' locker room as he watched a replay of her reaction. Married professional athletes have an understanding about things like sacrifice, pressure, and travel that not everybody else can relate to. But that understanding, by the way, does not always carry over into all aspects of life. That's why these two have taken a break from playing cards with one another. The loser, apparently, generally sulks, destroying the rest of the evening. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.